Hey, this is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Doug Gordon. If you weren't on social media in April of 2017, you might have missed out on one of the most epic fails of all time, when the Fyre Music Festival set in the Bahamas went up in flames. The festival promised popular music performances, luxury accommodations, the chance to mingle with influencers, and great food. But unfortunately, it did not go according to plan. Attendees who had paid thousands of dollars flooded platforms like Twitter and Instagram to share the disaster in real time. Chris Smith is the director of the Netflix documentary called Fyre, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And Seth Crosnell signed up to attend the festival. They joined us to provide an inside story into the Fyre Fest fiasco and who was to blame for the mess. Chris shares why he felt the desire to make the film and how he went about putting it together.
You know, I started with just a handful of interviews just to do an exploration to see what might be there. I did an interview with Gabrielle Bluestone, who was one of the main journalists that were covering it at Vice. And through her was introduced to a number of other people and other entities. The main interview that sort of pulled me in was an interview with Mark Weinstein, who was one of the event contractors. And, you know, we sat down with him thinking it would be, you know, 45 minutes or an hour. And it ended up being a 3.5-hour interview where he sort of just went through the entire experience in such detail, and his ability to look back and reflect on that time and that experience, you know, really sort of, to me, gave the project a soul.
In his review of Fyre for The Guardian, Adrian Horton writes that, quote, one of the more dizzying aspects of internet life is the surreal experience of digital agency, present but not in person. You help narrativize an event in real time through engagement, end quote. And it seems to me that Horton's comment really gets at one of the major themes of your documentary, this idea of the internet often being a fantasy world versus the cold, hard reality of real life. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this was a real-world example of that idea. It was, you know, they sold and marketed this luxury festival in the Bahamas on a remote island, and it was something that everyone, you know, bought into and believed in and wanted to experience. And so, you know, what the reality was just something totally different.
Yeah, so one of the key players behind this, even the key player, is Billy McFarland, and he's this guy who's the founder of the Fyre Media and also the festival. Can you tell me a bit about him?
Yeah, Billy was, you know, from all accounts, an entrepreneur from a young age. As he got older, you know, he started a company called Spling, I believe, which was sold, and then he went on to Magnesis.
This is Magnesis. It's the newest, coolest credit card.
The original vision was simple. I mean, we were just kids. We had figured out a way to turn boring plastic cards into nice-looking, sleek, stainless steel credit cards.
It was black. The thing was metal. It would make a big clank when you put it down. The girls were like, holy hell, like, what is that? Like, what do you do?
Billy really is one of the world's greatest salesmen. He could convince anyone of pretty much anything.
This is a young kid who figured out how to get these millennials and lock them in.
They offered like deals and discounts, and the big thing that they had was this clubhouse in West Village.
And while they were doing events, he wanted to book Ja Rule to come perform. And the process was, you know, very difficult, and he had to go through a number of different people. And so by the time they actually did connect, they started talking and they realized that there was an opportunity there to start a talent booking platform. And that's really where Fyre was born.
And at one point in your film, Billy McFarland says that we're selling a pipe dream to your average loser, your average guy in middle America. But this is something that your average guy in America couldn't afford, right? It was very expensive.
It's hard to say. I mean, there was some misconception that, you know, the tickets, you know, people were spending $50,000 or $250,000 for a yacht package or whatever. But I think, Seth, you found that the tickets were actually much less, right?
Yeah, right when we learned about the festival, it was this pre-sale option, get in now. It's $1,000 for, you know, the option we chose, which was, you know, 4 king beds. So it was $1,000 a person, basically. And, you know, buy this now because it's going to jump up to $12,000 or something like that. And so you see in the film that these boat and yacht packages kind of were added later on. to try to generate some cash.
And when you look at what they were offering for that amount of money, it was actually, you know, seemed like a really good deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a music festival that, you know, was in the Bahamas for 4 or 5 days for $1,000 seemed like a really great deal.
Early on, the marketing for the festival was very well done. How did the fire team promote the fire festival?
You know, when they went about starting the promotion, they actually went down to the Bahamas 3 times, and they went with different groups of talent.
Billy then had no rules. He had everyone drinking, open bar, wilding out. It was like more of a party than a promotional shoot.
Yeah, let me fly this drone.
Fire guys were partying nonstop, sun up to sundown, getting loose.
Billy fell asleep on the beach, literally just broad daylight out like a light.
The third trip, you know, they had some of the, you know, top models, you know, Instagram models and, you know, runway models and that they had brought down and were able to sort of create this facade. And it was incredibly well done for the target audience that they were going after.
Kendall Jenner was paid, I think, $250,000 by wire transfer just to post that one post.
When I saw the video, my first reaction was confusion. I wasn't sure who was the target market for the Fire Festival. Like, if you go to the festival, will there be Instagram models lounging around to Fiji grapes? So it was a combination of, like, confusion and excitement.
As soon as the models started posting, the Fire Instagram account just started to blow up. Overnight, basically, this massive, massive influx of enthusiasm and awareness, a PR storm like you've never seen.
So now, you know, we hope everybody comes and enjoys the cultural experience of the decade, Fire Festival.
It was really the execution that was dodgy, wasn't it? The festival was originally going to be held on an island owned by Pablo Escobar, and then they had to find another island with only about 6 to 8 weeks left before the festival. Is that right?
It seemed that way, and I think that the original intent was to do the festival on that island. You know, when that fell apart, they looked at a different island and then another island, and they ended up on Great Exuma.
Yeah, and then as they're having all of these difficulties building the infrastructure and there aren't enough houses and they've got all these geodesic dome tents, people who bought tickets still hadn't heard about their accommodation. This is just days before the event. And so let me ask both of you, what happened when people arrived?
My arrival was kind of similar to a lot of the others that you see and in the film.
Oh, yeah, like they didn't start construction on any of this until maybe a month ago. We see this sea of white little tents.
You first drive up to the site and you see shipping containers and Amazon boxes and mattresses and these tents everywhere. And
there was a disbelief on the bus. A lot of people thought that, oh, you know, maybe we're passing through this area. You know, our villas are just on the other side.
And it was the bus driver who said, oh no, that's where you're staying. It was like, oh my God.
Look at the beds.
Oh,
look at the beds.
Jesus. This festival is never happening again. I hope they know that.
There's just no organization at all. And finally, Billy stood up on a table and told everybody, you know, we just go grab a tent. And that kind of created a free-for-all that was pretty chaotic. And then if you had luggage, you had to go try to find that. By that time, it was getting pretty dark outside. And DJ music was blaring the entire time.
Billy came up to me and told me to just blast the music as out as I possibly could.
Everyone was like making noise, like, where I'm gonna stay, what I'm gonna do, what I'm gonna eat.
The attendees were looking towards anything, anyone, for direction.
Yeah, so it was a really nightmarish experience for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Chris, one of the most heartbreaking aspects of this whole story has to do with the many Bahamians who worked long hours to help McFarland meet his deadline. Many of them never got paid for their hard work. You have the scene featuring Marianne Roll, a Bahamian restaurateur. What happened to her?
Yeah, so Marianne got involved with these guys and started providing meals for the staff, for the people that were building the site. And so she started, you know, enlisting more people to help, and the whole operation just started to grow as, you know, they were working incredibly long hours to try to get the festival site ready because time was running out.
I had to literally pay all those people. I am here as a Bahamian. I went through about $50,000 of my savings that I could have had for any day. Personally, I don't even like to talk about the Fire Festival. Just take it away and just let me start a new beginning. Because they really, really, really hurt me.
And so, you know, in this chaos, certain bills weren't getting paid. You know, so she took it upon herself to keep the operation going. And so she invested her own time and her own money with the understanding that, you know, that she would be paid back. And I don't think it was an unrealistic expectation based on, you know, the perception of fire in the Bahamas. You know, there was a lot of celebrity, a lot of noise. So I think that everyone just felt like it was so chaotic because there was so much to do and that everything would work out once the festival had gone off.
Yeah. There's a very compelling scene after the whole disaster. There's a compelling scene in which the fire employees are having this crisis meeting with Ja Rule. I think Ja Rule's on the phone. He's not there in person. And Billy McFarland is there. What happened at this meeting?
Well, they're talking about the fallout, and they're talking about, you know, Billy apologizes for how the festival went down, and they're sort of having a team meeting to figure out, you know, the state of the company going forward. And in that, you know, one of the employees says,
I mean, that's fraud. Like, no, and that's not okay, like, no, as a company operates.
No. That's not fraud. That's not fraud. That is, I would call that false advertising.
Yeah, what is the difference?
You know, but in his defense, it's like, you know, they were in a really bad spot. And he was,
oh, yeah.
He was exercising, showing some leadership there. And I think, yes, you can say what you will about sort of the plan, but it was, you know, he was trying to find a way forward.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you try to interview Ja Rule and Billy McFarland for your film?
We did try to interview Billy. We were set up to film Billy once or twice. And in the end, Billy came back to us and said he wanted to get paid. He said he was being offered $250,000 from another production. And we just said we couldn't do that. And then he said, how about $125,000? And then we said we couldn't do that. And then he came back and said, how about $100,000 in cash?
Wow.
And we're just, at that point, you know, it just didn't make sense.
Yeah. There's this new Hulu documentary about the Fyre Festival called Fyre Fraud. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
Do you plan to see it?
You know, I've lived it for the last year. I don't think I need to see it again.
Yeah, there's been some controversy about the Hulu doc because it contains an exclusive interview with Billy McFarland, and apparently he was paid for it. And Hulu is challenging the ethics of your film because it was produced in partnership with Jerry Media, the social media agency that helped promote the Fyre Festival in the first place. Is that true?
Yeah, we worked with a lot of different people that were affected or worked for Fyre. It was a way to get the inside story, which to me was what actually made this interesting.
Yeah.
Was to be on, you know, have a front row seat to actually what happened. So, you know, we worked with different contractors that had worked for Fyre, and we worked with different agencies that had worked with Fyre that had footage, which to me was instrumental in telling the story because you got to actually see this world and experience this world firsthand as opposed to just having talking heads sort of walk you through what happened.
Yeah. So what is your response to Hulu's accusations of this being an ethical problem?
You know, I think it's unfounded. Jerry Media lost over $100,000. Matt Projects lost over $200,000. Almost all the contractors that we talked to didn't get paid. You know, so there were a number of people that were adversely affected by their experience with Fyre, and this film was sort of telling that story.
Yeah. What is Billy McFarland doing now?
Billy's in prison.
For how long?
6 years.
What was he found guilty of?
He was defrauding investors for Fyre Media and then also defrauded people related to Fyre Festival. And while he was waiting to be sentenced for those charges, he started another company called NYC VIP Access, which targeted Fyre Festival attendees and emailed them offers like Masters tickets and Victoria's Secret Fashion Show tickets and Met Gala tickets. And I think he convinced a number of people to give him over $100,000 for these tickets that didn't exist. So he got charged with that as well. Ultimately, he's going to be in prison for 6 years and I think a 3-year supervised release or something.
Yeah. M. David Lowe, the former creative director of Fyre Media, describes Billy McFarland as an operational sociopath. Would you agree with that?
He just doesn't take no for an answer. And I think if that fits the definition, that might be accurate.
Chris, what do you want people to take away from watching your film?
I mean, ultimately, You know, this definitely touches on influencers, influencer marketing, you know, this idea of perception versus reality.
Yeah.
And sort of the way we represent ourselves online.
Chris Smith is the director of the Netflix documentary Fire, The Greatest Party That Never Happened. And Seth Krosno is one of the subjects featured in the film. You can find out more about Chris, Seth, and the whole story at WPR.org/beta.
There are movies like Dr. Strangelove, which is satire, which has a political point of view. I don't think we ever had a political point of view. Our point of view was, hey, look, you don't have to take this seriously.
Filmmaker Jim Abrams on why we're still talking about Airplane nearly 40 years after it redefined comedy movies. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.